It's December 30th. It's me, myself, and I. Yeah, it's Max, actually, but I think being the fact that I'm alone on this one, hey, we can at least count three people. Bob got stuck helping someone move, and Nick is down in Chicago. Next week's cast will probably be Nick's last cast on here, at least. For a good time until he comes back for like a Christmas or a holiday or something. Or some sort of break. News for the week. There's not really much news beyond the facts. Wizards has released all of the the Aether Revolt inventions. Including a lot of the other artifacts of which people have speculated on going to be in Amunket? Not Amunket. Aether Revolt. Sucks being alone on this one. Included in those whatever number of inventions are two new cards. At which, when I get on the highway here, I'll bring up. One of them's called Paradox Engine, which I remember is 5 mana artifacts. Whenever you cast a spell, untap all non-land permanents. For 5 mana, it's going to be weird. Wonder what it would probably go in. But one of the nicer things is with... Might as well go into the fact of... Sorry about all the random cutting, random cutting of the cast... being the fact that I'm alone on this one, whenever I go to take a breath or a drink of water, there's not someone else to talk for me. So, ultimately it's silence at which I cut it out. Ugh. Other thing on the agenda, if you're going to probably stay into this cast, is I will be going over a little deck tech from my Bug in the Ice list that I brewed myself. Because I have no other idea what to talk about. So, just figured I'd go down the list and go that way. So, right, back to Paradox Engine. Because the weird thing is, if you're going to power it out, by the time you power it out, you essentially have played all your spells that can effectively power it out. And you won't be untapping much of your non-land permanents. Whether or not you have, like, creatures or something, so then you can have effective pseudo-vigilance, which wouldn't be too horrible. But as of right now, we don't know much in this new meta that's coming up for a standard. So, we don't know. We might have get some really cheap spells that we can cast just beyond that. Like, so... That'd be pretty nice. And I believe... Let me start bringing it up now that I'm getting on the road here. Aether Revolt. Mythic Visuals. Today brought to you by Mythic Visual. Mythic Spoilers. Alright. Now that I got the card list up. For the masterpieces that are coming back... We have Arcbound Ravager, Defense Grid, Chalice of the Void, Black Vice, Duplicant, Engineered Explosives, Ensnaring Bridge, Meek Stone, Grindstone, Extra Planar Lens, Oblivion Stone, Ornithopter, Sphere Resistance, Sword of Body Mind, Sundering Titan, Sword of Staff of Damnation, Sword of War and Peace, Trinisphere, Viridian Shackles, Pithy Needle, Platinum Angel, and Wormkill Engine. Anyone that was unable to follow that, you can look it up online. It's everyone else that plays Magic has probably looked the stuff up. It's great to see those cards coming back, beyond the fact that they will not be released in high enough quantities for us to find them well enough. So that's kind of unfortunate, because actually going back into it from the last masterpiece, from the Kaladesh Inventions, at most I've seen is two painters... And I forgot what we were doing in Milwaukee. I think it was Star City, Milwaukee. And I only saw two painters out of all the five vendors that were there. And only one vendor had them. So whether or not they're hiding them in some other spot or what, beyond the fact that the price of them was a little bit much than I was going to pay for them at the time, because I think they were like still $60 a piece when I saw them. So maybe they might have a better release on these. I don't know. I bet if Bob was here, he'd probably complain about it, but Bob ain't here. All right. Out of the two new cards that, as of right now, I don't know if they're going to be in the set or not. I have not actually looked this up. We have the Planar Bridge and Paradox Engine. Planar Bridge is a 6-mana legendary artifact. You can pay 8, tap, search your library for a permanent card, put it into the battlefield, and then shuffle your library. So, pay 8 mana, bring an Emrakul. No. this was highly expected from where the set was going to go into, that being that Tezzeret, from the storyline, Tezzeret wanted one of the inventions to probably bring something to either Kaladesh or to take something away from Kaladesh. Don't really know. We actually don't know, actually, yet. But, I don't know. I have very high bets that it's going to be in the Delirium decks that power out to get Emrakul out and or Ulamog. Because, thanks to the refix of rotation, we will have Battle for Zendikar still in format. Right? Yes. Yeah, they don't rotate until next block in Amuket. So, as people have said before, back when they were playtesting all these cards, they did not expect to have such a wide variety of cards. So, meaningless being the fact that now we have a Planar Bridge that can get any permanent. It costs 8 mana, which is, if you didn't know, it costs the same amount as Emrakul, if you're effectively casting them in Delirium decks. So, it's going to be weird, because I don't think Emrakul's trigger will work, so that won't work, really. But, being able to steal out a Nulamog, because he does it when he enters, is going to be pretty nice. Especially in instant speed. The other one that is going to possibly be in set is the Paradox Engine, as I was going over prior. Pay 5, whenever you cast a spell, untap all non-land permanents. So, I don't know what's going to be in the set that we're going to want to untap. We might get more rocks or something. I was hearing something about banners, maybe. We might get Guildgate banners. Don't really actually know at the moment. So beyond that, there's nothing much new. I don't know. Anything else I should bring up here? Oh, tonight I am heading down to Nerd Rage Gaming in Buffalo Grove to do their Legacy FNM. This might become a usual for all three of us. Well, maybe for Bob and I, at which we may be joining, having Jeremy on the cast, to the guy that, if you guys have listened to a prior cast, he built up Sneak and Show and has now fully built Death of Texas. So it's kind of a funny little thing that he went ahead and built his enemy. Also, in combination with the fact with the Sneak Show deck, the person that he was loaning cards from ended up taking the deck back. So, he doesn't have Sneak Show anymore. But he did build up Death of Texas. He had playtested it one of the nights that he playtested our Gauntlet version one of the nights he was down at Extreme. But, and he really liked it, so he ended up building it up. As well on my stops, I'm stopping at Epic Deli in McHenry. I got reminded of it because my buddy's got a big party coming up, and he spent $200 worth of subs at Epic Deli.
So may or may not even run into him, because he was heading his way down here at the same time I was. I don't know, I'm trying to think about any other news that I should bring up prior before going into this deck tech. Nope, not really. Alright. I bring up the deck list. So, kind of my idea on how I was going to go through this. Prior, I don't know if anyone that's listened to the cast, like, way from the start would know I've done Brewtex in the past. I call it Brewtex because I brew the deck and I do a deck tech on it. They were on SoundCloud, and not many people found them, so I didn't really keep them going. That and brewing a deck and doing a deck tech on a deck gets really annoying, especially when I've only done 2 to 3 games with a deck. So I kind of felt that my ideas on the decks were not strengthened enough to voice my opinion on them. So I kind of just kind of stopped. But being the fact that I had nothing else to talk about tonight, I plan on doing the brew tech of Bug in the Ice again. Because if you look for SoundCloud and search brew tech, they're still there. You can listen to my first time playing Bug in the Ice back when I didn't understand what the hell I was doing with the deck. I think it was more than like 6 months ago. So I don't know. You can go back there and listen to it, showing how much knowledge I had prior to now. But kind of further ado, I'm just going to start going in the list. At the same time, I'll kind of like name why I like the card in the deck and what it can interact with, just within the deck itself and or with other decks in Legacy. To start it off, we will be starting off with the creature base, which is Deathrite, Termagoyf, Thing of the Ice, and Phyrexian Revoker. First of all, Deathrite Shaman. Anyone that does not know what that card does, you either are getting into Legacy or you don't know what the card actually does. Beyond the fact it's basically a one mana planeswalker, in the effect that you pay a green or a black for it. It's a 1/2. And it can do one of three abilities. For the people that actually don't know what this card does, you can tap and exile a land from a graveyard. Usually you want to exile your opponent's lands, because this deck plays life from loam. So you don't always want to exile your lands, unless you're really mana screwed. Exile a target land from a graveyard and add one mana of any color to your mana pool. This is very easy mana dork kind of system. His second ability is you can pay a black, tap him, exile a instant or sorcery, and target opponent loses 2 life. This is kind of nice when you're stuck behind a Snaring Bridge, which, being the guy that I play Painter, when Nick was playing this deck, it's kind of always won a lot of games, because I keep on not able to find the Phyrexian Revoker to name as Deathrite Shaman in time. This is a very good tax effect, and being the fact that this deck will run kind of more of a longer game, it's pretty nice to be able to do 2 damage each turn and put a clock on the table. Especially in the effects that your opponent's able to cast spells out of their graveyard. That, and also if they're about to shuffle their stuff into, it works too. And then his third ability, which isn't really used much by most players. This deck might use it once or twice just to stay alive, actually, in all honesty. Pay a green, tap it, exile a target creature card from a graveyard, and you gain 2 life. This is pretty nice versus reanimator decks, or any deck that has a creature in the graveyard. Unfortunately, Deathrite Shaman is unable to interact with artifacts, so I've learned that to be a good thing when I'm playing Painter. Beyond that, Deathrite Shaman, let alone, works very well with Life from Loam, which when I actually get the Life from Loam, I will talk a lot more about it.
Then next creature we have is the big Goyf. Oh, and before I forget, Deathrite Shaman is a 4 of in the deck. Next up is the big Goyf. He is played as a 4 of. He's 2 mana, 1 green. And Goyf, if you guys don't know what he does, in the event that you're listening to this, still try and learn another deck. Or trying to get into Legacy, because ultimately this deck actually can cost you under a pretty good amount. Because it's not using the mainstream cards. It does have Goyf's and Force of Will, so and Mox Diamonds, so maybe not the cheapest of decks, but the accessibility of these cards is a lot better now, and let alone in the past. If you're not trying to find that one rare from, like, name an old set. I couldn't think of one in the top of my head. Sorry. Alright. Goyf is a 2 mana, 1 green, 1 colorless creature, or Lorgoyf. Creature, Termagoyf's power and toughness. Power and toughness is equal to the types of cards in your graves, and your toughness is +1, right? No, I should probably read it the correct way. Termagoyf's power is equal to the number of card types among your graveyards, among the cards in all graveyards, and its toughness is equal to that +1. So, pretty nice in a deck that plays every single type of card, effectively. That's if you flex build it. Like, I don't play Planeswalkers in this version, but when I get into optional cards, Planeswalkers are in there. So, Big Goyf, kind of more or less, is always a 3-4 for 2 mana. That's effectively when you play him for, like, the first time. And then ultimately, after about when the game... when you finally get this... when the game starts going, about maybe turn 4, he's a 5-5. So, it's... doesn't take much to... with this deck to get Termagoyf big and ready. Goyf is also a very good card within Legacy, if you're playing green. And can afford Goyf. Because I had the Future Sight sitting right in front of me, and that's $150 a piece. Now, of course, so I think the Modern Masters might be cheaper. This is also TCG Mid. Deck Builder app. It's a nice app. Costs money, but it's like $3, I think. I don't think it's expensive. Then for the final, well, not really the final creature. There's one more creature that I play in the main board. You can probably put it in the side. It's up to you. We have the Thing in the Ice from Elder's Moon. Many people have brewed, and this is kind of like the main brew of the deck, and that's why it's called Bug in the Ice. This creature, let me just go over it real quick, is a colorless and a blue creature horror defender. And when this enters the battlefield, you put 4 ice counters on it, and whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, you remove an ice counter. Once it has no counters on it, you transform it into Awoken Horror, which is when this creature transforms into Awoken Horror, return all non-horror creatures to their owner's hands. Take note the non-horror part, because that's why Revoker is played in the main, most more or less. This does cause a non-bow within Termagoyf and Deathrite Shaman, but I'm going to keep talking. You'll figure out why it's not too bad of a non-bow when you have to flip all your creatures back to your hand. The nice thing of the deck is, beyond these couple creatures I'm mentioning right now, the rest of it is instant sorceries. Well, then you get your land base with just 20 cards. Still, mainly instant sorceries, built kind of like a Delver deck in a way. More or less a Shardless, actually. But beyond that, a couple nice things about the card. It is an 0-4 butt, meaning versus Death and Taxes, you are able to block everything except for Sarah Avenger. That doesn't have anything equipped quite easily. It's got a 4 butt, meaning, again, it can't get bolted. It has to get double bolted. It's pretty nice. It is 2 mana, so Abrupt Decay does hit him. But at the same time, for your opponent to burn an Abrupt Decay on Thing in the Ice instead of something else in the deck, you're more or less happy, actually. Because then you can just drop down a Glaif and be just fine. More or less at the time right now, Thing in the Ice is... people are so worried about it flipping into a Woken Horror, they're willing to spend everything they can in one turn to kill Thing in the Ice. So, going back into the fact of why it's on a Nanbo with Deathrite Shaman and Termagoyf, is Thing in the Ice just kind of becomes a Lightning Rod. More or less, actually. pun intended. But, so, usually you don't end up flipping Thing in the Ice. They just kind of... the threat sits there, and then they'll kill it right before you can flip it over. Where at the same time, they're not killing your Deathrite Shaman, they're not killing your Termagoyf, and they're spending non-free spells to kill this thing. Don't think there's really any much for Thing in the Ice on that. It is pretty nice, because it is a board wipe for your opponent to... because then, ultimately, if the deck gets the right line of play, you'll beat in what you'll tax them with Deathrite Shaman, you'll beat in with Goyf, then ultimately flip a Thing in the Ice swinging for game. It is a combat winning deck, so Steering Bridge kind of does get in the way, where, going back to the fact, you have Abrupt Decays and Deathrite Shaman to handle that Steering Bridge. Other creature that I add of as a two of is Phyrexian Revoker. In Legacy, each deck usually has something you can name. It's highly rare, actually, because in all the top decks, there's always something you can really name. In Death and Taxes, you can name Stoneforge Mystic or Aether Vial. In any of the Loam decks, you can name Mox Diamond. In Infect versus Infect, you can name Noble Hierarch, which is good, more or less good to name. Because a big note to it is you can name mana abilities. So when versus my Tez deck, naming Dimir Charm works. Just kind of how it works. Please excuse me, I'm going to be randomly trying to find Epic Deli here. Because I just reached McHenry, so if I just randomly stop talking, please excuse me. Oh, and then versus Sneak Attack, which this deck kind of loses to, I'm not going to lie. There's nothing really good you can show until then. Really haven't thought of anything that you can put in the sideboard beyond the Steering Bridges, which kind of become Nanbo versus the way this deck wants to win. So, kind of versus Sneak and Show, you don't have much voice in it beyond your Force of Wills. So, you have to just fight them on the stack. You can also use Phyrexian Revoker to name Sneak Attack. That works too. Versus Painter, name Grindstone. It's... once, if you know Legacy, play Phyrexian Revoker in your main. If you don't know Legacy, I assume you kind of want to put it in your sideboard, because then you'll be able to know what your opponent has for... for whatever they want to use for the win con. And be able to name efficiently. You can't name lands, though, so it kind of gets kind of annoying when you can't name Wasteland, or Dark Depths. So use caution when playing those decks. One of the nice things, and going back into it, versus Sneak and Show, your best bet is actually more or less... I'll stop talking for a second. I know where the hell I'm going. Alright. Apparently my silence is going to be put into the fact that I'm going to go in and get food. I will be back. I also have food, so... unfortunately to you guys, I'll be eating it in the car. I may return to the cast once I finish eating. I think that's actually... alright, see you guys in a bit.
was actually about maybe 20 minutes before I got back. Right now I have GPS working, so please excuse me if you guys hear my GPS goes off. What was I going into? I was going into Bugging Ass versus Sneaking Show. Kind of the more or less big things when versus Sneaking Show is one of the nice things about Thing the Ice is with all the spells, you can leave them at one ice counter. You can just leave them at one ice counter and then play an instant, such as Brainstorm. Or even one that has not played in many main decks called Surgical Extraction. I'll get more into that when I get further into the deck. Other thing versus lands, same thing, same kind of idea. When they make a Merrill Age, all you need to do is flip your Thing in the Ice, and the Merrill Age is gone. You don't have to worry about it much longer. Then in Beyond, the lands decks, playing Abrupt Decay. Sneak and Show doesn't have much answer to a Thing in the Ice, so you kind of get free will on that. Another nice thing to note is this deck is actually not as susceptible to Grindstone as most decks. Not Grindstone. Chalice of the Void. Many prison decks run Chalice of the Void. It's not an unheard of thing in a prison deck. But the nice thing is that Thing the Ice does trigger off of you casting the spell. The spell doesn't need to resolve. He does trigger off of you casting it, so it's pretty... So, I mean, you may non-bow a Brainstorm, a Ponder, or any other one-mana spell that's in the deck, but you still get to remove the counter, and ultimately, in a prison deck, if you're swinging with a 9-7, there's not much they can do about it. You have Replicates for the Mysterium Bridge, as I said before. Sorry, I'm about to make a turn here. I don't know exactly where it is. So, have fun with that about just a little bit. This is where actually I'll figure out if my recording will stop if the GPS talks. But once I make this turn, I'll be able to bring up the deck list again and get back to what I was doing. So, back into some banter about Bugging the Ice. And go into why I named it Bug on the Ice. I just think it's because it's kind of catchy. And it's Bug. Or for you new gen players, Sultai. Other versions of the decks are the straight blue-red variant. Which, when I get into other optional cards you can use. Other ways that you can play this deck too is you can add the red and Grove of the Burmalos to play Punishing Fire. I'm not going to go over it in this counter list. I'll probably go over it again when I get to optional cards versus this build. But Punishing Fire, pretty nice. I'll get into it later. It's another engine card like Life from Loam to get your Thing in the Ices being ticked down. Oh, and what I ended up getting an Epic Deli was called the Gilly. I, as a person that likes Euros, it was pretty nice to taste cucumber sauce with Euro meat and steak and bacon. Some pickles in there, then I think some jalapeno. So it was some spicy thing. I don't know if it was banana pepper or jalapeno, but it's definitely good. I actually still have more to eat, but I got a foot long and I wasn't able to finish it in one sitting, at least. Or at least that I wanted to. Probably eat it later. Alright, I'm going to show you now. I can get back to the deck. Alright, so I don't know how much is going to be edited out from prior, but we're getting right back in the deck. So we're on to our spell list, which is mainly instant sorceries, excluding one card called Mox Diamond. It's played as a 4 of Mox Diamond, for those of you that don't know what it does. I should probably actually stop saying that. You guys are probably tired of me saying that by now.
It is zero mana. When this comes into play or added, if it would enter the battlefield, you may discard a land card instead. If you do, put Mox Diamond on the battlefield. If not, you put it in your grave. So to be able to put Mox Diamond on the field, you need to discard a land card, which when you're playing Life from Loam, not too big of an issue. That, and it's also a mana source. It also gives you 2 mana on turn 1, which this deck having all 2 drops, except for a couple 1 drops. Well, not really just a couple. It's even on 1s and 2s. Nothing really above 2. Being able to play a turn 1 thing in the ice, it's pretty nice, because then your next turn can be engine spells. That, and I think that it's possible to flip a thing in the ice. It is possible to flip a thing in the ice turn 1. And a 9-7 on turn 1 is pretty strong. Not a 9-7, sorry, an 8-7. No. Back to Wogenhauer. Or, sorry. Trying to speak quickly. It's a 7-8, sorry. It's got a very smaller front instead of what I thought. So, sorry about that from earlier. Uh-oh, which one went? So yeah, so 7-8 on turn 1. It's pretty strong to be swinging. You do lose the flip effect, but to come out on the gate with a 7-8, yes, Sneak and Show can do it in 1, but this is a Sneak and Show. That deck, you can use your Force Wills to beat. What Mox Diamond does, effectively, once it's on the field, is you can tap it to generate 1 color of any mana to your mana pool. Again, you get any color mana, so you get your any color's a bug, mainly. That, and when I said prior, saying Punishing Fire, you get your red source there, too, so you're able to play a little bit more conservatively, being the fact you're able to play kind of almost all colors. The downside of having to discard a land is not that bad, actually. And also, there's another way to get around Blood Moon, which this deck, being the fact that it's 3 colors, has a considerably greedy mana base. Yes, the Mox Diamonds can be named by Phyrexian Revoker, but as I went back into it when I named Phyrexian Revoker earlier, not many people play in the main. It's usually a sideboard effect. I know Death and Taxes does play in the main, but I think they're going to name Deathrite Shaman before Mox Diamond, just as a kind of idea, actually. Mox Diamond allows you to power out those spells you really kind of need in the field. It speeds up the deck, that just that little amount that this deck needs. I've actually been playing Mox Diamond in a lot of my decks recently after finding out how much strength that thing actually has. Haven't really found the drawback to it yet. I might at some point, but the cards are kind of nice. Alright, so, and then next card will be... This is a blue deck, so if anyone can guess what card that's not Force of Will, that's played as a 4 of, that's 1 mana, it isn't speed... Yes, this is Legacy, so the deck is playing Brainstorm. People have made podcasts on this card alone. I'm not going to get in too heavy on why Brainstorm is good, just in the fact that, on how it interacts with the deck, because I'm just going to be lost if I try to say how good Brainstorm actually is. I, as a non-blue mage, have really failed Brainstorm a lot, but... One of the nice things is you can... So, effectively, what the spell does is you draw 3 cards. 1 blue, just instant speed. Draw 3 cards, put 2 back on top of your library. Best way to do this for you new players is you have a fetch land in hand, or a fetch land on the field. And if you happen to draw a land or had a land in hand that you could fetch, it's best to then, when putting your 2 cards back, to put back the land and... Sorry, there was a random car on the side of the road. Go back into it. You put back your land so that when you fetch,
you gain the value of one card since you effectively were going to get that card anyways. It's better yet not in your hand. It's better you find it in your deck. That, and you don't want to brainstorm much when you can't shuffle your deck afterwards, because then you get brainstorm locked, which will, when you put those two cards back, more or less, if you don't understand what that means, is you'll be drawing those two cards for the next two turns. And ultimately, you brainstorm because you didn't have the card you needed in hand, so why would you want to draw it on any other turn? Yes, this card can find you fetch lands. Don't expect it to. Otherwise than that, it's just a speed spell, one mana, flip thing in the ice when you exactly want it to be done. It's kind of nice to save it in this deck. You don't usually want to fire it off too much unless you're looking for an answer. Another interaction with the thing is, since you are drawing cards, you can dredge. Dredge is on Life from Loam. I'll get more into it when I get to Life from Loam. But when you can brainstorm twice, being the fact that you brainstorm, put two cards you don't want on top, then you brainstorm again, dredging the first three cards, so you lose one card out of it to get your Life from Loam back, and you put your Life from Loam back on top of your library if you didn't need it that turn. So the two cards you didn't want, you did need a shuffle, you didn't need to draw them either. You just dredged them in your grave and got rid of them because you didn't actually need them for the game. Otherwise than that, I don't think there's really much I won't rest to point out on that. Is this speed spell goes for Goyf? Woohoo! It gets flung by Deathrite Shaman. There's no way to recast your instant sorceries in this deck. So once they're in your grave, they're basically ammo for Deathrite Shaman. When ultimately you do want to be exiling your opponent's stuff, if you didn't know that in the effect. The next card that is added to the list is a 3-of Ponder. Many people do not want to run 3-of. They either use a 1-of or a 4-of. I generally use a 3-of because I never want to draw a Ponder. With this deck, you really actually don't want to draw a Ponder. You want to draw different spells and have Ponder somewhere else in the deck. I mean, it is very nice to draw Ponder at like a late game and shuffle. That's usually pretty nice because it is a shuffle effect if you don't use it. Going to what the card does, it's a 1-blue sorcery. Look at top 3 cards of your library and you rearrange them and put them back on top. You may shuffle your library afterwards. Take note, you may, and then you draw a card. So it's a really quick top effect. If you guys know what top does, I'm not going to go in that card because it's not in the deck. It's one mana sorcery, so I mean, it can take counters off of Thin the Ice, but it's sorcery, so you can't do it in an effective amount of time in which you want to do it. So, more or less, out of the cards in this deck, that if I had to remove, it would probably Ponder, but at the same time, when you need Ponder, you need Ponder. But the only thing is, you don't want to see Ponder until you need it with this deck. So it's kind of unfortunate. It's probably better yet to play a card that what you need rather than trying to play a card to find the card you need, if that makes any sense. I move on to the next card for a main board favorite of this deck. It is called Surgical Extraction. Many people play this in their sideboard because I really don't know why. Probably because their deck is so strong as it is in the main board. They don't need Surgical Extractions. They'll put them in afterwards if they end up needing them. Which, effectively in Legacy, more or less, you can actually use them at any time. There's been many times that I've used a Surgical Extraction for the most odd of ways to win me a game. I'll get into that after I explain the spell. Surgical Extraction is a Phyrexian mana black. Instant speed. So, it's basically a free remove a counter from Thing the Ice. If you look at it that way, alright, cool. You just drew a card that can... You pay 2 life and flip, remove a counter from Thing of the Ice at instant speed. That good, people, right? Right? Cool. That's why it's play on the main, actually. Other effective reasons is because when the spell resolves, you choose a target card in any graveyard besides the basic land. So you can name Fetchland, you can name Inkmoth Nexus, you can name Bayou. Not a basic land. Name something that's not a basic land. Well, target something that's not a basic land. Sorry. Effective nomenclature. Gotta get ready. Once you have targeted and the target has not changed for some reason, or eaten by a Deathrite, for those people that think that's kind of cool, you can eat the surgical extraction target. You will then search that player's hand and library for all copies of the targeted card. If any idea on how this card could be really kind of strong is in my Painter deck. I need two cards to win the game. I need Painter and I need Grindstone. At some point, with counter spells and destroy effects, one of those ends up in the grave. If Surgical Extracted, you have now removed my ability to win the game. So that's why I find it really kind of strong, is because in any combo deck, you can remove the win cons. Again, going back to versus Sneak Attack, if for some reason their Emrakul doesn't actually hit the field, you can remove it in response to them, in response to the shuffle trigger. Then they'll get remove one of their win cons from the deck. The other one being Gristlebrand. And same idea. As long as one of them enters the graveyard, you can remove them at instant speed. Works good against reanimator decks too, which is generally usually faster than Thing in the Ice. Versus normal decks, you're able to remove that Abrupt Decay. You're able to remove that Swords of Plowshares. All you need to do is touch the grave, and they're not going to use it again. Another effective way that Surgical Extraction has been used. There was a time at which I Lightning Tutored, and Nick just Surgical Extraction, a random card, I think it was a Pyroblast. Just Surgical Extraction a Pyroblast from my graveyard. I already had three of them in my grave, but I just Lightning Tutored, so effectively I had to shuffle. So that Lightning Tutor was wasted, and he got rid of all my Pyroblasts, even though I wasn't going to be able to come back. But at the same time, there was a time at which, with Surgical Extraction, I ended up eating one of my own Deathrites to beat an Eldrazi deck to flip a Thing in the Ice. I was at 6 life. This was pretty nice, because even then, my opponent didn't have any ability to... I didn't have anything engraved, so I just... Circle of Strike is the only thing I had in my grave, and it was Deathrite Shaman. Swung in for game. So, again, the two life, remove a counter off a Thing in the Ice is kind of strong. Effectively, why this is played alongside Cataxian Probe, if I can say, but almost kind of over Cataxian Probe, is the instant speed, and you look at your opponent's hand. So, I mean, both cards do about the same thing of letting you see your opponent's hand. One has an additional effect where it removes all the cards at which your opponent can be winning the game with, and the other one, you can draw a card at which you may need the answer to, which you did not remove in the first place. So if you had removed the card already, you wouldn't need to draw the answer, if that makes sense. That in a Cataxian Probe is a sorcery speed, so effectively a non-bow when trying to remove counters off of Thing the Ice, unless you're going for that last one to get the last beats in on your turn. Beyond that, Surgical Extraction, I don't think I have any more news on. For those people that are playing black decks, just try one or two in your main. Because the ability to see not only your opponent's hand, but your opponent's deck, because then you can then see what deck they're on, which is in Legacy really great. That's kind of one of the main things to Legacy is figuring out what your opponent's playing. And if you can figure that out, then it makes your game a lot easier, especially when you're playing main deck Phyrexian Revokers. Because if they're playing a combo deck, you know exactly what the name by that point. Then again, the faster decks usually require some form of something touching the graveyard. So, removing them all, going back into versus lands, They will entomb a Dark Depths or Thessie stage at some point. More or less. I mean, once you surgical extract them, they're probably not going to do it the next time. But not many people know you had them in your main board, so they're going to probably entomb one of the Dark Depths, and you can just remove their win con right then and there. Game's over. Oh, the game's not over. You still got to win the game, unfortunately. But they're not going to win the game, so... versus Miracles.
Turn right onto Illinois, 83 South.
Versus Miracles is another one where I actually tweeted about it. Nick had surgical extraction. My Terminus is... Terminus A. We'll go Terminus A. That, in Miracles, if people don't know, is the main way Miracles survives. So, since Miracles cannot live anymore...
Turn right onto Illinois, 83 South.
Could not effectively live anymore, I ended up losing that game. Actually, I didn't. I got down to about 2 life and still won the game because Nick misplayed, but... Either way, had Nick not misplayed...
Continue on Illinois,
game would have been over because I could not remove Goyfs. I would not be able to remove Flip Things... It's not very fun. I'm actually about to get to the store right now. So I'm effectively just going to cut it right then and there. I'm going to finish my sentence and cut it right there. So heads up on that. When you hear the music kick in, it's going to be almost ready for me to cut out or whatever. Next card is Abrupt Decay. This is right now as a 3 of in the main. There's been many talks about putting it as a 4 of, and a lot of people say I should run it as a 4 of. The reason I run it as a 3 is because it's 2 mana, and you don't always want it. Usually you can find it. You have Ponders, you have Brainstorms, you have Probes. You can actually find it a lot easier. Effectively, I would probably remove the 3 Ponders from the deck to put 2 Crows and Grips and Abrupt Decay in the main. There's always something for 3 mana in every deck that can be destroyed. Except for versus Sneak and Show, which kind of doesn't have many 3 mana things. Actually, it just plays Sneak Attack. But you named it with Phyrexian Revoker, so good job for you. Again, going back to why Abrupt Decay is only a 3 of, is because I'm trying to get this thing to have the best bets against the main board against other decks in the game. So, Abrupt Decay. Woo! Good card. I'll go around. Actually, what the card does is it's 1 black, 1 green. It's the speed. It cannot be countered. So, bye-bye counterbalance. Everyone's so worried about that. Can't be force-willed. I don't know. What else can counter it? Downside is Sanctum Prelate does keep you from casting the spell. It's kind of unfortunate. Oh, and you also remove that Chalice of the Void that your opponent has on you, slowing you down. That's even great, right? We don't remove Chalice of the Void? So, Abrupt Decay. Congrats. It's not really... It's probably a good answer to a lot of things. Next card... What Abrupt Decay actually effectively does, beyond the fact that it's not countered, is it says destroy target permanent, non-land permanent. Take no non-land, so it can't remove any destroy Enigma on Nexus. Been there, tried that. Doesn't work. Convert a mana cost 3 or less. So, I don't know if I actually explained it or not, but beyond that, just did. Now you know. Next card in the list is Life from Loam. This is the bread and butter of the full deck. It fuels Deathrite Shamans. It makes Goyfs bigger. And it's an engine for Thing in the Ice. This card is highly needed in your deck. It's played as a 4 of. For those of you that don't know what Life from Loam does, Life from Loam is a 1 mana, 1... it's a 2 mana, 1 colorless, 1 green sorcery. Not too big of a bad thing. Return up to 3 target lands from your graveyard to the battlefield. Oh no, not to the battlefield, to your hand. And then has Dredge 3.
those of you that don't know what Dredgen does, is when you are to draw a card, at any point, Brainstorm, Chase, Ponder, Gataxian Probe, at any point you're able to draw a card, Cycling. That's another way people trigger Dredge. You put the top three cards of your library into your graveyard and return the Dredge card back to your hand. Well, this one's Dredge 3, so effectively you've returned Life Room Loan from your graveyard to your hand. So you have ways to bring all your lands back. Your fetch lands, your wastelands. Yes, I said wasteland. You can wastelock people. It's a lot like a Loam deck. Hey, wait. Life Room Loan. Loam? Box Diamonds? What? Pinnacle Triangle. It's the engine of the deck. Life from Loam. Again, as I was explaining earlier, at any point you're able to draw, you're able to dredge. When you brainstorm, you can do it as the first or last. You don't usually want to do it as the second, unless you're really weird. Effectively, you're drawing three cards, so you can do it at any point during the draws.
Turn right onto North Arlington Heights Road.
With this deck, whenever I'm playing long games, I always have a fistful of at least six lands
in my
hand. I usually have like six lands thanks to Life from Loam in hand. Brings back your fetch lands so you can refetch. Brings back your waste lands so you can re-waste.
Continue on North Arlington Heights Road for 2 miles.
And effectively, you bring back your dual lands that are your non-basic lands that got wastelanded. So, effectively, your opponent's wastelands from such as Death Nexus and Goblins, or some Merfolk lists, all the single-color decks that play wasteland, or any other deck that plays wasteland, their wastelands become null and void, being the fact that you have Life from Loam. Because somehow one of them's going to enter your graveyard. No one knows how, but one will, and that's kind of effectively how you're going to win the game. Going back into it, Life from Loam fuels Deathrite Shaman. It's Dredge 3. Put three cards in your graveyard. Usually you're going to put an instant sorcery in there. So if your opponent isn't playing an instant sorcery every deck, guess what? You have your own instant sorceries. Goyfs. Let's just put a Mox Diamond in my grave. After about turn 1, 2, or 3, Mox Diamonds are useless. Put them in your graveyard. Guess what? That's an artifact. Not many decks play an artifact. A lot of decks in which you're playing Abrupt Decay for do play artifacts, but you can effectively get your own artifacts in your grave and fuel Goyf up flat +1/+1 needed to become a 5/5. That's where it becomes kind of nice that you're playing First Revoker, because it is an artifact creature, which is +2/+2 to Goyf. Woo! Then again, going back into it, Thing of the Ice. Thing of the Ice engine. You cast it once or twice each turn. You're fetching each turn. Or you're playing a land each turn, or a wasteland each turn. And again, you put up to three targets, so you actually can target zero. And it's just an engine to remove counters off of Thing of the Ice, effectively. I didn't turn there. Anything else about the deck? Once there's a Life from Loam and you have a Goyf or a Thing of the Ice out or a Deathrite Shaman, that's basically your next few turns. So just rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat. It's very rare that you don't want to dredge for just the engine effect or the triple cards in your grave. Because, you're putting cards in your graveyard, so the cards, if you needed a card, you don't really want to dredge. So when you're sitting there thinking about trying to dredge or not wanting to dredge, even when playing the deck called Dredge, you can ask yourself, well, dredge, actually, you always want to dredge. So effectively, just ask yourself, am I looking for a card right now to stop my opponent? If the answer is no, you dredge. That's exactly what this deck.
The only cards you can actually find to try and stop your opponent is Force of Will and Abrupt Decay. Those are really the only way you stop your opponent with this deck. Or you're trying to find a creature. That's what you don't want to dredge either. The only cards you can get back from your grave are your lands. So it is kind of nice to dredge anyways, because then you can bring back your fetch lands.
1,000 feet.
You know what, I'm going to actually end the cast here, because I think the next few cards, actually, I'm just going to power it out through. Life Alone, again, great engine in the deck. I'll go more into it when I get back on the cast. This deck, I'm running a one of Toxic Delusion, the main, and then two of them in the side. Toxic Delusion is nice, because you get to remove all creatures from every deck that you're worried about. So, for those of you that don't know what it does, two colorless, one black sorcery, pay X life, all creatures get minus X, minus X. The more or less effectiveness you're going to pay for this, the more or less of what you're going to pay for this is about three life, because that would kill everything in death and taxes, not death and taxes, yeah, kills everything in death and taxes. It doesn't kill your Goyfs, it doesn't kill your Thing in the Ices, it will kill a Deathrite, it will kill a Phyrexian Revoker, where at the same time, you put those things in your grave, and it feels a Goyf. Back to Toxic Deluge. Toxic Deluge, then, alright, so that's your board wipe. Of course, in Awoken Horror, you can pay up to 7 life, and your Awoken Horror will not die. Just remember to swing before, if you can afford it at least. Swing before you pay, do Toxic Deluge, or else you're losing ground, which you could have used, because it does minus X your creatures, so they lose their power. So use caution with that. Again, as an all-around, Life from Loam is pretty good. It removes Sanctum Prelate, which is when I go back into the when I go into the cards that really can handle this deck. That's one of the main ones played in Death of Texas. So I don't think it's played in any other deck as of right now, any like tier one deck. So that's kind of it's a 3-mana answer. It's your only 3-mana spell in the deck, unless we go into when you're playing Planeswalkers and all that. Alright everyone, I'm gonna go ahead and hit the cast now. I'll see you all. So, my recording, I was recording for about 20 minutes, and my phone just randomly reset. I don't know why. Then I don't have my directions anymore. Didn't miss much, actually. I'm going to work on right now, trying to get my directions up, so that way I can get home, if you don't mind me in 2 seconds here. I don't know what got hit or what, but my phone just randomly shut off. Alright, so figure I might as well point this out now. So after how the night went was I just went 0-4 with Painter. Yeah, not a good thing. I ended up pulling out Smolder's Copter for to put in another Revoker and a Vexing Shusher. And being the fact that I didn't have any draw power from said Smuggler's Copter, I just got destroyed because it was a burn meta. So a Chalice of the Void would have been great. There was one guy playing a Dark Maverick Loamless with Chalice. Or it was like 4-color Jund. I don't actually know what he was playing, but it had it was a Knight of Reliquary's deck with Punishing Fire. So yeah, it was actually Punishing Jund Maverick, because it still had no. It wasn't a Maverick list. Sorry, but either way, he had Chalice of the Void in it. It's Punishing Jund. What the hell am I thinking about? Beyond that, oh no, Punishing Abzan. Sorry. Yeah, Punishing Abzan. My final round, I got to bring out my mountain proxies. So if you look at my Twitter, you could see the picture of my mountain proxies on his bayou, no, his scrubland and his Crocus. And I think some other card. I think it was a bayou. But either way, it was, I mean, my final game was kind of fun, except for the fact that I went 0-4, so I'm kind of in a bummer mood right now. But either way, let's get back to the Brewtech. So I believe I left off with the final spell of the deck, and that will be Force of Will. It's 3 mana, 2 blue, instant speed, but you can pay 1 life and remove a blue card from your hand from the game to pay its mana cost. So essentially, the spell is free. It's a free counter spell. It's only a 4 of, and you only have it for the instances of game 1 wins. It has no other reason beyond that. So, and then the land base is 8, I think 9 fetches? No, 8 fetches. Yeah, 8 fetches and 10 fetchables. With, no, it's 8 fetches, 8 fetchables, with 4 wastelands for 20 card land base. The main thing is it's bug, so you have to play each duel that you can play for bug as a 2 of, whereas right now with our list, we do remove 1 duel for a forest and then play 3 basics. So I think the list actually has 24 lands. Either way, the main thing when setting up the land base is if you're more blue, of course you're going to want more blue duels, and if you're not blue, you're going to want more green duels. The only reason why you need black in the deck is for Deathrite Shaman and Abrupt Decays. That's really it. Beyond the Surgical Extractions, which are you're going to probably cast for free anyways, so you really don't need the black source. The deck for mana already plays Mox Diamond and Deathrite Shaman, so gaining your colors is not too tricky, but so it's not completely hindrance on your land base. That's like, you could probably play basics for all the matter, like since it has the mana base that it does, and maybe add a Birds of Paradise or some Chrome Box or something, because there's really no need for duels in the deck effectively, unless you don't have Moxes and stuff. So I mean, build your land base as you need it. That's where this deck is going to get expensive, because you do need seas, you do need bayous, you do need Verdant Catacombs. Well, you could probably get by with Misty's and Polluted, but and then what's the other one? Tropical Islands. So you're going to be, it's not going to be the cheapest land base you'll see, because it is kind of more of a shardless land base, where at the same time, if you have built the shardless deck, you already have the land base. All you need to do is put these cards of which I named prior into the deck. So that in this deck compared to shardless, they have about the same strength. The deck is just strong and considerable. Like, it's not a good deck, it's not a bad deck. It has the answers to basically every deck in the game in Legacy. The downside is that it's not always finding the cards as the answers is not always accessible. I mean, of course, with more seat time with the deck, the strength of having every answer to every deck, it could be there. I mean, answer to something in every deck, not considerably always the answer. but at least be able to slow down or hinder or at all stop your opponent's deck and most effectiveness. I don't know. Other ideas to the deck of what you can do is out there. There is a blue-red list, which you're able to play bolts. You do the Punishing Fire, Grove of the Burn Willows combo, which, for those of you who don't realize what it does, Punishing Fire is a 2-mana instant spell, 1 colorless, 1 red. Deal 2 damage to target creature or player. In the event that the Punishing Fire is in your grave and your opponent gains 1 life, you may return Punishing Fire back to your hand. Why this combos with Grove of the Burn Willows is Grove of Burn Willows is a land that taps for colorless, or you can tap for a color, give your opponent a tap for a green or a red, and give your opponent 1 life. If you don't realize on how that works together, is you tap to add a red, give your opponent a life, and then use that red source to bring Punishing Fire back to your hand. That's the engine in the deck instead of Life from Alum. Like, Bug in the Ice, I use Life from Alum as the engine. Whereas with that list, you can use Punishing Fire as the engine to flip things next. Also in that deck, you're able to play... This is your only blue-red, and you're not worried about Deathrite Shamans. So... And you also don't have Goyfs to play either, so you're more spell-based. So you play Snapcaster Mage, you play Dazes, you play, what is it? You play possible 1 or 2 Spell Pierce. But you have your Snapcasters, and you're also able to play another card from Eldritch Moon called Bedlam Reveler. It is 8 mana, 2 red, I believe. I don't quote me on it. I'm not going to look it up either because I'm kind of driving at the moment at night. The Bedlam Reveler, he is a creature horror, which is, well, I think he's a devil horror is his actual title. But being the fact that he's a horror, he doesn't flip to Thing in the Ice, which is really nice. He's a 4/4 prowess, I believe. Again, don't quote me completely on it. But his awesome thing is... Well, his, one of his two awesome things is that he costs 1 colorless less for every card, every instant or sorcery in your graveyard. So in a deck of mainly instant sorceries, almost a Delver list. Bedlam Reveler ends up costing only 2 double red. When he does enter the battlefield, you discard your hand and draw 3 cards. Which, effectively, if you want to know exactly what that means, is you pay 2 mana, put him on the field, and draw 3 cards, because you had no other cards in hand. So, a 4/4 with prowess, and then you got your Snapcaster Mage. You got your, you're able to play Lightning Bolt, which is really great versus most decks. It can almost be a burn list. In your own greed, you can play Price of Progress, which is targeted play. Each player takes 2 damage for each non-base that they have. I know. I believe it's Jerry Mee from Leaving Legacy who built up the list. So of course he's on Hipsters of the Coast. You can look up his list. You can listen to Leaving Legacy, and he's got that list of his Bug in the Ice, blue-red Bug in the Ice list. I think in any other cases, I know like he would play a deck Faded in the deck, which is pretty nice as like sick tech. Deck Faded is a 1 colorless, 1 red, 1 blue, plus 1? He's a Planeswalker. Plus 1 is a draw 2, discard 2. Minus 2 is take control of target artifact. And I think minus 6 is if you target it, you take it. Which is pretty nice when you get to be able to play like pyroblasts or anything. So, I don't know. I might even build up a straight up list that I might build up a blue red bug lance list that is it kind of works towards playing planeswalkers. In the notion of planeswalkers, I mean, in that list, you're able to play Jace. In Bug in the Ice list, you're able to play Jace too. I know I went out testing out Jace. It didn't hinder the deck. It's all on your own skill level if you want to play Jace or not in your Bug in the Ice list. Jace is the Mind Sculptor. What he does is... Oh, this is... Someone's going to definitely hurt me if I don't get this right. Alright, so... Jason Mind Sculptor is two colorless, double blue, planeswalker. Starts at 3 loyalty. Yes. Plus 2, look at the top card of target player's library. You may put it on top or bottom. Really good when your opponents have no cantrips, like such as the Painter List, Death of Taxes, Goblins. Any deck that really doesn't have a way to alter their deck. His minus one? No, sorry. His next one is a 0. You effectively brainstorm, draw 3, put 2 back on top of your library. Minus one is return target creature to its owner's control. And then minus 12 is exile target person's library. Their hand becomes their library. Shuffle your hand. Or shuffle your library. This is kind of on how Miracles usually wins. And with the Jace ult, that's like the main way of win cons to do. Him in the list didn't really hinder the deck at all, because it's an alternate win con by himself. It's very easy to keep him alive. He's also a way to answer your opponent, let alone the fact the 0 mana brainstorm plus dredge abilities works really well. Then again, you can also play Liliana. You're playing Goyf plus Liliana. You kind of are able to select what you put in your graveyard. You also then don't need to pay the 2 mana to put Life from Love in your graveyard. You can just put it in your graveyard, and you always usually, if you have the engine up, you'll have a Life from Loam, so you dredge Life from Loam, discard Life from Loam, dredge Life from Loam, discard Life from Loam. You get the picture. That's when you're plusing Liliana. Of course, if you're minusing her, you're answering True Name Nemesis. You're answering many creature lists. I'm still recording, right? That's like the worst question to ask right now. Still recording. Minusing Tour, you make your opponent sack a creature. Choose a colorless, double black, for those of you that didn't know what Liliana did. Plus one is each player discards a card. So that's good against combo decks. And then versus creature decks, you have the minus 2. Then our minus 6 is separate target players or opponents. Either way, you're targeting your opponent with this ability. Separate all permanents your opponent controls into 2 piles. They choose 1 pile. And then sacrifice the rest. This is where I've mentioned before on the cast where I want to start doing lily piles. Because it's very inquisitive and very thought-provoking on what you do with lily piles. Like today, I tweeted where I had 2 Ensnaring Bridges, 2 Grindstones, 1 Blood Moon, 1 Seal Cleansing, 2 Plains, 1 Plateau, and 1 Mountain when my opponent ulted a lily, and he ended up separating the Ensnaring Bridges and the Grindstones, putting the Blood Moon and the Seal separate, and I think he put... Oh, and I had a top on the field, and I think he put the top with the Blood Moon. And had 2 planes. I ended up selecting the one with the top planes. At which then he went Abrupt Decay. And the full idea of having 2 Ensnaring Bridges was out the window. So when you look into the fact of, yes, he separated the Incineroar Bridges, he could have done Incineroar Bridges and then every other permanent in the deck, and just kind of blown me out that way. But when he had an Abrupt Decay in hand, you kind of have to remember that, because he's able to then make me destroy one of my Incineroar Bridges and then Abrupt Decay the other. Let alone on however my choice went, I was not going to have an Incineroar Bridge on the field. He then swung in for 10. So, I don't know, Lily and Bugging the Ice is also kind of weird, because then you're up in your black count, and you're going to need a lot more black, being the fact you're going to have to support a double black base. But you do have Death Threat, and you do have Mox Diamonds, so you're not losing too much. So, I don't know, definitely one to try. It's not an idea to put in the deck, because it does kind of... It's an engine in itself, whereas it's not an engine. I mean, what to remove from the deck to put in Lilies or Jace's. You would remove possibly Surgical Extraction and maybe Toxic Deluge and one Thing in the Ice, maybe. I think that's what I would remove to put a two of them each in. If not, do one Lily, two Jace, and remove... Well, keep it just Surgical Extraction in the sideboard, and then have one Lily, and then remove the Toxic Deluge. Because ultimately, Toxic Deluge is in the deck to not only board wipe, but it is also an answer to the one card you can't kill, and that's True Name Nemesis. Beyond the fact that a lot of decks, if they're going to go wide, they're going to go wide, and a Deluge will wipe the field. Other ideas, you can play Daze if you really want to be more counterspell heavy. You can play Daze and go for more of a tempo list, but I would drop out a number of Goyfs for that. Spell Pierce again, not a horrible idea. Neither is not Seer of Visions. Or is it? I don't know. Another thing I just remembered, you also play Vapor Stank, which is one blue instant speed, return target permanent to its owner's hand. Its controller loses one life. It would be kind of nice. It could be nice when you're trying to save a Thing in the Ice, because when your opponent goes to answer it, you can remove it, you can mount it back to your hand. I know another thing we use, I mean, you can also play Submerge in the deck quite fairly. For your sideboard. Another thing we have been testing with is having Mr. X. For those of you that don't know, I play him in my Tez list as in other ways to counter spells. Whereas in the deck, unless you're trying to fight against counter spells, Mr. X doesn't really do much, and the only other way that's really good is by redirecting Abrupt Decays and Surgical Solar Suppressors and Bolts. Even though Bolts are kind of a non-bow win versus Bug in the Ice. So that's really the only reason why you want Mr. X is trying to redirect your opponent's stuff. Whereas, at the same time, if you're really worried about your stuff, go ahead and just play Spellskite, which is a two colorless horror 04. Pay one Phyrexian blue and redirect anything to Spellskite. It's like Spellskite would be great against Infect, because when they're targeting their stuff, you can redirect to your stuff, to your Spellskite, and you don't have to pitch a blue card to misdirect. Those of you that don't know what misdirect is, it costs and casts the same as a Forcible, except for you don't have to pay the life, and you just redirect spells. One nice thing you do with misdirection is you can redirect a opponent's Force of Will to their Force of Will. Or redirect their Force of Will to your misdirect. It's weird. It works. It's not counterspelling your Chalice of the Void. It's not killing counterspelling your Turmogoyf. And it's most definitely not counterspelling your Mox Diamond. If for some reason your opponent's going to force a Mox Diamond. So then you got Vapor Snake. Serum Vision. What is the counter target? It might be Serum. No, Serum Vision is the scry to draw one. Or is it draw the scry? Either way, that's a modern playable, and that's why we're getting mixed up. What's the name of the spell? But it's counter target non-creature CMC2 for one mana. That's a counter spell. You can play engineer explosives. That's strong versus multiple decks. That kind of non-bows your use of Toxic Deluge, by the way. If you're going to play Engineer Explosives, you're mainly playing in a Miracles meta. Whereas, because, I mean, Bug in the Ice does kind of lose to Miracles, being that the deck is mainly ones and twos, and then the rare three drop. So, fighting a counterbalance is definitely going to be tricky, beyond the fact you do have Revokers to name top with. So, that's kind of weird. But you do also have Abrupt Decays. Again, a lot of answers to the things that stop this deck. You have Abrupt Decay, and you have a way to cast it no matter what answer they choose to use. Crimson Grip is good. I have played it in the main, played it in the side. Doesn't hurt the deck playing either way. In Legacy, there's always going to be an artifact or an enchantment that you got to destroy. There really always is. I can't think of one deck in which there's not going to be something you want to destroy with a Crimson Grip. Don't worry, I'm trying right now to think of something. Because versus Show and Tell, you can Crimson Grip the Sneak Attack as well as the Omniscience. Right? So I don't think Crimson Grip has a soft limit on it. Crimson Grip, for those of you that don't know, it's a split-second instant spell for two colorless and a green. Destroy target artifact or enchantment. I think that's the only constriction on it. Restriction on it. For those of you that don't know, you can still get your Crimson Grip countered to counterbalance. It's very weird, but it can be done. For those people that are wondering, or are playing Miracles, that wonder on how would you stop a Crimson Grip, save a 3-mana spell on top, because since counterbalance is a triggered ability, not an activated or played spell, split second does not stop it from triggering. So you are able to flip a 3-mana spell to counter a Crimson Grip. That person that wants to go through and find out how many times I've said this cast, feel free. I will laugh. I'm trying to find other words to say, but I can't think of any other word. I might cut it a couple of them out if it's just a blank pause. So, yeah, easy. Do need to know at some point I'm going to stop for a beverage of some sort, because my throat is horrible right now. I don't know, other ideas for the deck. Adding white for Swords to Plowshares, that's about it. There's other ideas where, since Thing in the Ice will flip and bounce things to hand, where that's where Snapcaster is kind of good. You can re-snap. You can, other ideas were to play Shardless, so then you can re-cascade. Being that the full deck is able to be cascaded into beyond cards of which you're not going to want to cast, playing Shardless would not be too horrible. But then again, for a whitelist.
Alright, I'm back. Give me a second. I'm going to end this map quest thing now that I'm in an area which I understand where I am. So now I'm thinking of other cards to maybe use in the deck. I know Probe. Probe's pretty nice. Texting Probe. One Phyrexian Blue. Sorcery. Look at target player's hand. Draw a card. This is played in Storm decks too, and many other decks to gain info on your opponent. Whereas I would rather play Surgical Extractions to gain info from my opponent, being the fact that I have the ability to remove pieces, combo pieces, and answer pieces from my opponent's decks. Well, that tastes weird. I went ahead and my drink of choice, I saw it, I was like, Mutant Monster. It's a mutant soda from Monster. I'm like, I'll give it a try. I'm having the green one right now, and it tastes like super mellow yellow, with a lot of mellow and a lot of yellow. It's not that bad, though. Would I ever buy it again? No, it's actually not that tasty. I don't really like mellow yellow as much. But, yeah, it's basically just super mellow yellow. Go back to Bug in the Ice. So, I don't know. There's probably a Stoneblade list out there. Because adding Stoneblade plus Thing in the Ice, you flip Thing in the Ice to Woken Horror, you bounce back Stoneblade, you bounce back Stoneforge Mystic, replay Stoneforge Mystic. And Stoneforge Mystic alone is just a strong deck. Well, just a strong set of cards. Those of you that don't know, Stoneforge Mystic is a one colorless, one white. When it enters the battlefield, search your library for an equipment card and add it to your hand. Pay a colorless and a white and tap. Put an equipment card from your hand into the battlefield. And it's a basic 1/2. So, I mean, those decks usually play a 1 of Jit, a 1 of Batter Skull, and a 1 of the Sword of Fire and Ice, Sword of Feast and Famine, Sword of Body and Mind. Well, I don't think Body and Mind's a lot of, I don't know. They play one of the swords in the main, usually Sword of Fire and Ice, since it gives you that blue-red protection. That Jit and any other card is really strong, so I don't know. I might try a 5-color Thing in the Ice list and go all crazy. Because with the mana base being the way it is, it really can go anyway. The deck versus the Blood Moon deck, we're tweaking it on being able to be more basic supported, so that way it doesn't get all its mountains. It does have Mox and it does have Deathrite, but again, if your opponent puts a turn 1 or 2 Blood Moon out, your best bet is going to be Mox Diamond. So, not too much value in that instance. So, I mean, your answer to Blood Moon is Mox Diamond, and then a couple of Mox Diamonds and or Abrupt Decay. That Blood Moon's not too much of an issue for you. Chalice on 1. You play many 2-color, 2 CMC spells, so it doesn't really hinder you that much. Where you do get kind of shut out is with Sanctum Prelate, whereas where you play the Toxic Deluge is kind of a good thing. There was a time where we forgot the D-side and we were versus Circa on Death and Taxes, and
having the two Toxic Deluge really helps, because one, it killed the field, and he's like, all right, Sanguine Prelate, because he killed my field, being playing smart and all that, and he's like, draw a Toxic Deluge, and with Sanguine Prelate, naming on two, because it keeps you from being able to name, from being able to have Life from Loam, your engine, well, any engine spell, for that matter, the Punishing Fire, Life from Loam, whatever you chose off of that, whatever engine you chose for the deck. I'm trying to wonder what other engine cards there are that you can just kind of cast each turn. I mean, another one you can play for, like, answer spells is you can play Dark Blast, which is one black instant spell with dredge, I think three. Target creature gets -1/-1. So that's not too horrible. It's one engine spell. It's black and one mana. So you can play two of those a turn. Not too horrible, is it? I'm trying to think of a non-dredge engine and a non-punch fire engine. I don't know. I'm looking at this idea for the some Abzan list. Because instead of having blue in the deck, you're able to play a more Dark Maverick style build. Though you will still need a blue in the deck for Thing of the Ice. So without having a main blue base, maybe more or less having more of a Maverick build wouldn't be too horrible. Still wondering what engines there are. Planeswalker's ideas. I can't really think of any other one to really play. Again, there's Deck Fading if you're playing the blue red list. That's the only reason why you would play that list. You could do a four color variant where you remove, I think it was the two Phyrexian Evokers, the Toxic Deluge, and one Force of Will to run the four Punching Fires, and then you adjust your land base to run Grove of the Burnwills. Instead of, I think, Bayou or whatever. You already have Mox Diamond for Red Source, and all you don't need to have a red. You don't have to have a Red Source Ghoul. I mean, I think I put a Taiga in there just in case. But more or less, you don't really need to have more Red Source than what you already have. I don't know, highlights when playing the deck. Again, Deathrite Shaman is just a truck, really. And it's really good at, setting a time clock, because with Life from Loam engine, and that it only costs one mana to deal two damage, it works very well. Another big answer to the deck is graveyard hate, such as Life from Loam, Leyline of the Void, or Rest in Peace. This turns off your Goyfs, it turns off your engine spells, because you can't get them back. So, I mean, you're not, the game isn't over yet, but the nice thing about the Leyline of the Void and Rest in Peace, the decks that play those can't really answer a flipped Awoken Horror as well. So your pace of the game versus those decks is you're a lot quicker. And again, in the event that you're gonna need your graveyard for some reason, you have Abrupt Decay or Crows and Grim. Versus Infect as of right now, Infect is usually a lot quicker. Usually, it's erasing against Infect in more or less terms. Your Thing in the Ice becomes chump blockers because, I mean, ultimately, they're going to need to use a lot of spells to kill your Thing in the Ice, and he can take down as much as he needs to. And within timing of it,
to flip a thing, guys, in one turn isn't actually as hard as it sounds with this deck, because you have, you only need so much mana, I think. Allow me to count it up for a little bit here, because having at least one, with only having needing one surgical, you can play a thing in the ice. If you have five mana, you can play a thing in the ice and at least one probe or surgical, flip them. And then again, with skill within the deck, you can start timing yourself to get the right, have them take down the right amount at just the right time. And going back into versus those big beater decks, leaving them at the one frozen counter to then flip when they go to win, such as versus Painter as well, any creature-based win con deck that isn't like combat-y, flipping them at the right time is definitely really great. I know when I was playtesting the deck, I won a lot of games just on the strength of the deck. There's not many ways you can misplay with this deck. There's definitely a lot of choices. I can tell you right now that usually when the deck's been running at its best, you're usually doing about three things a turn. You have Deathrite doing something, you're swinging with a Termagoyf, and you're setting yourself up for the next turn. All at once, all within maybe one or two cards, and you just keep rinse and repeat, and usually have like about three outs to every situation, even though I'm telling you right now that like Abrupt Decay is usually always your answer to whatever they play. There's a lot of other answers, because like most of the things that your opponent can have in answers, you really don't care about. They play Insanity Bridge, you got Deathrite Shaman. They play Phyrexian Revokers, you have Thing the Ices to flip the Revokers to their hand. So there's not really much, like, it has the answer to what your opponent's going to answer to yourself. Whereas the deck itself, I mean, it's a grindy deck. It's not really, I mean, after playing Shardless, maybe like five games effectively total. I think I've definitely put in more reps to Shardless beyond that, but it's not as control-based-y. It's more, just more of a grindy game of attrition versus your opponent. Of course, you have Wastelock, which is always a good thing, let alone the fact that you have Deathrite and Mox Diamond to produce your mana while you're Wastelocking people. So you're not in a complete nombo with versus all decks. Accessory removing your opponent's Wastelands is also kind of cool. There's no double mana spells in the deck as of right now, where you need a double color, so having the one of Mox Diamond gets you there. Well, having the Mox Diamond on the field gets you there, because all you need to do is produce that one color you need. Again, Life of Loam is an engine to both Thing the Ice, Goyf, and Deathrite Shaman. So I don't know, it's like Loam of the Ice in kind of some weird way. Opening hands, as long as you have either Deathrite, Goyf, or Thing in the Ice, you can basically start a hand. Obviously, you need other things. Oh, please excuse me, I'm probably going to get pulled over my light in about 2 seconds. Excuse me while I end this cast for a sec. Alright. Lake Shield Officers are definitely really cool. Yeah, I got pulled over for my light being out. It kind of sucks, but I do the best I can to try and fix it as much as I can, but I'm unable to fix it at the moment. But then again, knowing Lake Shield Officers, it's not how cool they are. I got a verbal!
I've got my, I think, 20th verbal for my light. So, that's pretty cool. I thank those officers very much for being as nice as they are. So, no, I don't think there's really any much more to bring about than the ice. Really, the only thing I had to say about it is it's just really just a strong deck, and with enough grinding of games with Thing the Ice, with the Bugging the Ice list, this deck could probably be unstoppable, really, if put in the right hands. Because then they know exactly, like, what to mull, how to be conservative. The deck plays Brainstorm and Ponder, so you're able to set up your turns quite very well, like... So, I mean, really, in the right set of hands, this deck could really do really well. It's just... Right now, the only two people that have touched this deck are me and Nick. So, effectively, we're not too skilled in all intents and purposes, but at the same time, this is kind of a continuous brew that keeps going on. It has its own ideas. I mean, so it's kind of cool to see that Thing on the Ice actually did get some, like, is getting legacy play. I know at one point I just wanted to make a Thing on the Ice deck. I ended up making, like, a 2-mana horrors deck that also played the Deceiver of Horrors, which is 3/3, and you can pay 2 mana to return to the battlefield from your grave. Just while it's in your rave, and I think it cost 2 mana to play, and it was a horror. So then you can engine yourself the fact that your creatures don't die. And they're all horrors, so effectively, though, in the mirror match, it wouldn't do too well. The downside is you'll be mainlining the Thing in the Ice variant, where you're trying to flip Thing in the Ice. Which, it takes 4 frozen counters and 4 spells to get counters removed. It's not something that really happens a lot. And for the deck to be called Thing in the Ice, that's really not your win con. Your win con is the Goyfs and Deathrite Shamans. They kind of get hidden behind the fact that you have Thing in the Ice. So, effectively, as I was saying before, if the answer is the Goyf, you have a Thing in the Ice. If the answer to the Thing in the Ice, you have Turmogoyf. And the same goes for Deathrite Shaman in the reverse. And as well, it's not susceptible to Chalice of the Void. You're able to waste lock people, so you don't need to worry about Blood Moon. Well, you do need to worry about Blood Moon in a way, but you do have Mox Diamond, where, as I was going into before, you don't have any double mana spells, except for Abrupt Decay, where you need 2 mana of a color. So that's where, if you wanted to play the Punishing Bug in the ice list, you have all this red source for Punishing Fire now. You lose the Girl with the Barbellos engine, but at the same time, you have very many Punishing Fires. So, I don't know, this is a sign-off, I believe, kind of now. So, hopefully I'm able to make a somewhat good cast out of this stuff. Next week, we will hopefully return to our regular scheduled casting. It will probably be Nick's last cast for us being here while he's up here in Wisconsin area. Contact info will be in the show notes. I don't know if Bob's actually going to put this up, being the fact that I did a brew tech. I think since I went in well detail, it could work. I don't know. If you guys want me to continue doing these brew techs, I was actually thinking of just making a brew tech channel and doing like one deck a month of a brew and then a deck tech on the brew. In the event that maybe you want this to be the off-FNM style of, like, maybe once a month, we'll just take a deck and go card by card, why it's good and why it's in the deck. We can do mainstream decks. We can do brews. Again, you got to contact us on that stuff. Because again, our cast, I think we're on, this is going to be week 24. I know we missed a week. Sorry, random cat in the road. So effectively week 24, but week 23 in naming nomenclature. So, I don't know. This is goodbye and see y'all. Hope y'all had a good new year, because, of course, I'm recording this on December 30th, but for those people that are listening to this, it's going to be after the new year. So, hello, future people. How is the new year going for you? All right. See y'all.